Warning! This episode contains foul language, mentions of murder, sexual assault, and suicide, and it smells like maple syrup.
Are listening to Keep It Weird, the podcast for all things strange and unusual, quirky and quizzical, disgusting and dark, and all around absurd. Each week we have the pleasure of hanging out and chatting about something weird, and this week is very special because not only are we traveling in our minds, but we also have a very special guest. This week we're heading to the land of Wayne Gretzky, poutine, and unlocked front doors. The Great White North, America's hat. It's time for another Hometown Haunts. So pack your mittens and your maple syrup and try to stay on the Mountie's good side because we're heading to Canada. My name is Ashley and this is my co-host Lauren.
Hello, weirdos. A? No, is that, I have to put A?
Oh, you know, like, yes. Yeah, I was trying. That's a Canadian
You know,
thing.
I did a thing.
And today we are joined by a hilarious comedian. You may have seen him on America's Got Talent or caught one of his appearances on my favorite talk show, Conan. Ontario's greatest export, Mr. DJ Dimmers.
Whoa, Ontario's greatest export.
The best thing we've gotten out of Ontario. Here's the thing. I'm really bad at knowing like who came from where.
Right.
I mean, greatest export out of Ontario, Avril Lavigne. Ooh. I mean.
Oh yeah, that's true.
You have some competition. Justin Bieber. I mean, but I'll take it. Yeah. You're not here right
I'm
now.
I'm still
going
to put you at the top of that list.
You're the top.
And I just met you today.
You're the tip top. DJ, we met when I managed a comedy club called Flappers Comedy Club in Burbank. This was 5 years ago.
Wow, already?
Was it that long ago? Yeah,
I guess it was. Time isn't even...
It's not a real thing.
...real anymore. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm from Canada originally. Been living in L.A. for 5 years now, so probably would have met you right around the time I moved here.
Yeah.
That adds up. Yeah, married.
Yes, you got married. Congratulations.
Thank
How
you.
Recently?
It was like 2.5 years ago.
Congrats.
Yeah, but you know, the pandemic, that accelerates everything. We've been married for about 27 years.
Yeah,
now,
sure.
So, in pandemic years. But yeah, I mean, married, stand-up comedian, Canadian, I think. Oh, I wear hearing aids too, which I guess is something about me. I'm a regular-ass white dude with hearing aids.
Hearing aids. That was actually one of my favorite jokes I ever heard you tell. Because I would always... kind of pop in when you were on stage, and when a couple people, there was like 4 people that I was like, if they're on stage, I'll pop in and watch. And one of my favorite jokes you told is actually about America's Got Talent and about how like when you auditioned for them, you were like, they were like, hearing aids, get over here. And you were like, I also do stand-up comedy. And they were like, just bring the hearing aids. We'll figure the rest out later.
Wow. That's like almost word for word how the joke goes. So
really?
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Good sure memory. And that is pretty accurate. That is how the whole process on AGT goes.
That's what I've heard. And I've...
Yeah. You were witness to it.
Yeah. I've watched a couple episodes. I kind of know how it goes.
I mean, I get it. They're very good at tugging at the heartstrings.
Hell yeah.
So as much as I'm cynical about that stuff, sometimes though... they'll do it in such a way where you're like, I know that's manufactured, but damn, if that didn't move me a little bit.
I got the tears coming out my eyes. Yeah, they make me cry every time. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So just before we get into it, you wear hearing aids because...
I needed comedy material.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Of course.
Couldn't just be a regular ass white dude in 2021.
I mean, shtick. Come on. Yeah. That's it.
I wear them. I've had them since I was 4, so they don't know if I was born with it or if it, you know, I got a lot of ear infections when I was young, so it could have been from that. I actually just found out an ear, nose, and throat doctor came up to me after a show in Ventura Harbor 2 weeks ago, a retired ear, nose, throat doctor, and he asked me if I had a lot of ear infections when I was young, and I said, yeah, and he asked me how old I was. I said, I'm 35, and he said, do you know kids in, I think, the early 90s, 91, started getting an immunization against a germ that caused ear infection. Oh. So, like, because I knew a lot of kids, not just me, who got a lot of ear infections. He said kids very rarely get ear infections anymore because of this immunization now. So I'm like, maybe if I would have been born like 5 years later, maybe I wouldn't be hard of hearing. But yeah, I don't know.
Interesting.
But this guy was so funny. He was so comfortable. There was a jazz band playing after the show, and he just came up to me. I'd never met this guy. He just watched me perform. He goes, "Must be hard for you to appreciate jazz." I was like,
he really went for
excuse me?
Excuse me, yeah. Sir?
Maybe, "Hi, my name's Joe," or something.
Also, it's I can hear first. The jazz.
Yeah,
that's I'm happening. The
I think he was just trying to say there's like a lot of intricacies. Right, I mean, yeah. He's not really wrong. I'm sure I'm missing some stuff in jazz, but it's a pretty bold opening line.
Yeah, so forward.
That's
did
true.
You ever have to get? This is such a random question. Did you ever have to get tubes in your ears when you were younger?
Yep, I had that done like 7 or 8 times. Maybe like, probably like 8 times. A lot. They'd fall out and I'd get them again.
Well, I thought of it because I was reading a story recently that a lot of adults are finding out that their tubes didn't fall out. And like ear, nose and throat doctors are digging out tubes that have been in people's ears for like 20 plus years. Because the doctors say like, oh, they'll just fall out. But they, I guess with certain ears, they don't.
Oh,
and they're
wow.
like getting like huge buildups of wax and like crazy thing in their ears because of these tubes. So that freaked me out. I don't think that happened to you, but it freaked me out.
What what year were you born? I can edit this out.
I'll 86.
Just, I'll bleep it.
I don't give a
you're,
shit.
You're in entertainment. I'll bleep out your age.
I really don't care. I understand why some people in this industry do, but I don't think I'm really skating by on my youth or anything. I don't know.
You're really banking on it.
Yeah.
One more question. And I think we've talked about this before. Like right now, we're sitting how many feet apart? 4 feet apart. Four pita fart.
Leave it in.
I had so much coffee today. We're sitting 4 feet apart. Can you hear me pretty clearly?
Yeah, I can hear you. I told you guys before the show, I got this little device from a hearing aid company I work with. Phonak, that's the name of the company. And it's like help. I'm trying to see if this little mic will help me, like pick you up directionally.
Mm-hmm.
It is helping. But even without this mic, yeah, I mean, we're in a quiet living room.
Yeah.
I'd hear you fine. But if there's any sort of background noise, I would struggle a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, this is totally fine. But the pandemic, everybody had the mask on.
Ooh,
it's been rough.
It so yeah.
I mean, I have jokes about it now, obviously, but it's like people have always asked me, like, how much can you hear and how much are you lip reading? And I was never able to do the math, but now that everybody's covered their mouth, I was finally able to run the numbers. And turns out I'm lip reading 100% of the time. So it's been brutal. It's
no
been brutal.
Kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, Joey, my fiance, he has horrible hearing in general just because he listens to his music at full volume. He grew up in a very loud family. So, like, I'm a very quiet person. So, we struggle all the time because he can never hear what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But also, he didn't realize how bad it was until the pandemic. And he was like, I'm really struggling with just that tiny layer of...
It changes it all. You don't realize how much you're looking at people's mouths and trying to...
I just saw this study that got published on my Instagram that just having the mask on brings the average conversation... 3 to 4 decibels down.
Oh,
like,
wow.
That's how
that
much it softens it. Yeah, that's not
huge.
Insignificant. Yeah. So yeah, it's rough out there if you're reading lips.
Yeah.
But even just like facial cues, like there's so much pressure on the eyes now. Mm-hmm. I like smiling at people, but you don't actually like smile that big when you walk down the street. It's a little one. But now with the mask on, you have to make sure you're showing it in your eyes, you know?
You really gotta squint.
Yeah, it's almost offensive. Like doing a bad De Niro impression of everybody.
I will really literally walk down the street and be like,
you do the full squint. Like, don't get it twisted. I
don't
am
get it
smiling.
Twisted. I'm smiling at you, ma'am. Okay. So, when you moved to Los Angeles, did you move straight from, it's Kitchener, right?
That's not where I moved from, but that's my hometown. Yeah.
Hometown's Kitchener. And then where'd you go?
Toronto. I performed in Toronto for 7 years. That's
where
I started stand up.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then you came straight to sunny Los Angeles. So
LA, baby, Tinseltown. Yeah.
Do you miss Toronto?
Yes, I do. I love it there. But comedy-wise, it's way, you know, like I get to perform at the the Hollywood Improv or the Comedy Store, or I travel around America. And so I've always wanted to be a comedian. So the idea of like living in Toronto again would feel like a step backward.
Sure.
But in terms of like a livable city, a beautiful city, amazing people, food, culture, all sorts of things. Toronto is a world-class city. I love it. And I got family there. Obviously, my whole family's still back. So I miss it in that sense. But
yeah.
I don't necessarily want to live there anymore.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It's not conducive for what you want to do with your
life. Well, it's a great comedy scene, too. Like, coming up there, I could do two or three shows a night, you know. But there's no, like, industry, film and television. So there's not even, like, a thing to move on to. It's like, oh, you got great at stand-up? Cool.
Cool.
Yeah. Keep doing that in the shadows and see what happens.
That's your whole life.
In these seedy, sticky clubs.
But it is cool because you feel like nobody's paying attention, so people get weird. Like in LA, a lot of sets can feel like a showcase set. So you're like, ooh, better bring my A material. And you're afraid to do something weird or try out some funky new joke or idea. So I do think Toronto's conducive to creativity because you feel like nobody cares anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
So that's cool.
Having more of a comfort there of like, oh, I'm going to try some really bizarre stuff tonight. That would be nice.
Yeah, exactly. I actually kind of felt that at Flappers because at the time that I was, I mean, I still perform there, but they used to manage me as well. The people who own Flappers managed me, and they told me early on, you know, like, we know you're funny, so you can get weird here. Try stuff out.
Yeah.
And that was huge moving from Canada to LA because getting up at the store, the improv, I was like scared, you know, I was like, I hope I'm funny.
Yeah.
So having a place in within LA in Burbank that I could just try new stuff was definitely, you know, liberating.
Yeah. That's one thing I will say about Flappers. They are very, very, very great with blossoming comedians as well, like the guys who are just starting out, like they do provide spaces for them to experiment and even when I was there, what's his name from Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Jeff Garland
had a residency. It was like every Monday Jeff Garland would come and he would just bring a notebook and he would basically
just
do crowd work and tell stories, and it was amazing every Monday.
I love that. You're saying like what people pick up, what they react to. That's so smart.
Yeah.
And by the way, he says by the way a lot. I can't do impression, but yeah, he's great.
And he makes fun of Flappers every single time he's on that stage.
Oh, yeah.
Because he thinks that the theme is stupid. And I say no comment. So today we are talking about Canada, because that's where you're from.
Mm-hmm.
And Lauren is going to start us off and tell us about some of the most haunted places.
Spooky places in Canada, which there are so many. It was really hard to whittle it down to a small list. Like, Canada's got the haunts, guys.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of, we went back and forth for this episode, sorry to interrupt, on whether we should do Ontario specific or Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that, like, Canada's population is basically like the population of California.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It was like, let's just do the whole country.
Yeah, we're just going to do it all.
Which means you probably found quite a bit.
The population of California within the space of Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's the crazy part, is how expansive it still is.
Because think there would be more people up there, but what?
There are not.
Freezing cold.
It's chilly up there. Yes, but I am going to start in Ontario because I just thought, you know, why not?
Yeah,
we're gonna
love it.
You like it. I'm starting with, this was actually one that I had heard of but didn't like really know the lore or the story behind it, but it's called the Screaming Tunnel. Have you guys heard of the Screaming Tunnel? Already a terrifying name for you all, but I had heard this mentioned before, and maybe there actually might be one in America too, but it's located in the northwest corner of Niagara Falls in Ontario, in Canada. And the legend says that if you stand in the center of this tunnel, which runs underneath what was once like the Grand Trunk Railway lines back in the day, this was right underneath, and it wasn't part of the railroad. I guess just it like took drainage from something. It barely functioned. It barely functioned. It was built and then just kind of like hung out there for the rest of time. But the lore is that if you stand in the center of this tunnel underneath the railroads and you light a match, the match will go out. It'll be blown out immediately. And it won't be like, oh, the wind picked up. It'll feel as if a little breath came in, blew out your match.
Creepy.
And then you will hear a terrifying scream from a little girl. Why, you ask? Well, let's get into it. So there are a couple different stories, of course, as with any kind of legend, but all of them are really awful. So the legend begins with a young girl that met an unfortunate fate. That is always true across the board. And each one agrees that this little girl lived in a farmhouse on the south side of the tunnel. One night, her house either caught fire and she fled the building with her clothes on fire and reached the tunnel just as she was falling to the ground and perishing. The other tale is that she was set on fire deliberately by her father in a drunken rage when she ran away from home. So okay. They just keep getting worse. And then the third and final most awful one is that she was sexually assaulted in the tunnel and her abuser lit her on fire to hide the evidence. And that's how she died. But whatever the story is, this girl died a horrific fiery death in this tunnel. And that is why you can hear her screams. And that's the whole fire element to it. So that is how legend has it. And there are a lot of skeptics.
That's the worst.
It's so bad. A lot of skeptics say that they think when people think they're hearing the scream when they're in the tunnel, because a lot of people say, guys, this is legit. I know it sounds absurd, but I hear a high-pitched scream. Some skeptics think they're just hearing trains in the distance and like that high whistle and their brain is telling them that's what they're hearing. And also, if a train...
Amazon. Oh. It's one of Joey's birthday presents. It's the girl. It's the little girl.
It's the little girl.
She's here from Ontario.
Don't get a match. And then, yeah, with the match, you can explain that away because a breeze could blow by and it would go out. But
I can barely light a match in this apartment.
No, I feel like they go out when I'm just in my living room. So I don't know how they would expect it to not blow out. But this spooky, ooky tunnel is made of rough cut stone. It measures 16 feet high. It's 125 feet long. It's super dark. And especially at night, it basically just becomes a creepy black hole. Like, you do not want to be there at night. Even if you don't believe in any of this, you don't have to even go in and light your match. Like, if you just look at it head on, it just looks evil. It looks sinister. It's so creepy.
Did you say it's underground or above ground?
It's above ground, but it's under a railroad that's like elevated up on a hillside.
Yeah, that sounds creepy.
It's just
dark and
awful.
There are plenty of places in this world that is like, this isn't haunted, but I'm not going there at night.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I don't want to go in there.
Whether or not it was this little girl, I'm like, somebody's been murdered in this tunnel before.
I'm sure a few people. Bad stuff happens there.
Someone's died here.
Yeah, just a dark, like, chilling. It's not good. But fun note, there is one fun note in this horrible story, you guys. The Screaming Tunnel was used for filming of the movie The Dead Zone, the 1983 Stephen King adaptation. Christopher Walken had a scene where he was seeking temporary refuge, and I think he had to look at a dead body in the scene. I don't know if that rings a bell to you at all. It's pretty short, but they're in it. No. And it's creepy.
Really? Yes. I'll have to rewatch it. I've been wanting to rewatch it anyway, because that's a good one.
Well, there you go. Look out for the Screaming Tunnel. It sounds awful. I will never go. But
and what's it used for today? It's not used for anything.
It's not used
today.
For anything. It just exists.
It's just there.
It's just there. It used to be used for some sort of drainage, and now it's just hanging and being spooky. So that's that. Moving on to Ottawa, the Ottawa Jail Hostel.
Also, if we pronounce any places incorrectly, will you call us out?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you're doing good so far. Ottawa is the capital of Canada. So if you pronounce that one, I might correct you, perhaps.
As you should.
Otherwise, say whatever you want. Niagara Falls.
Niagara.
Yeah, I don't think everything's pretty easy to pronounce. But
the other day I said to Joe, I said Toronto, and he was like, it's Toronto.
Like,
and
you don't say the T, just Toronto.
Sorry.
Where's Joe from?
He's from New England. He's from Connecticut.
Okay. Well, he's got a bit of that northern thing because it's just Toronto to Canadians because that's just how we say it. But a lot of Americans say Toronto and it's like, Yeah.
He went to Canada quite a few. He was a hockey player.
So me too.
He's been there. Oh, really? We've talked about this.
Have we?
Yeah. I had to have brought it up to you because Joe and I had basically just started dating.
We did. Yeah. I was looking at our Facebook messages right before I came over here, and I went up to find your phone number, and a previous message a few years ago was you telling me that you're a Bruins fan because he got you into them.
Yep.
And I became a Penguins fan because of my husband, who's from Pittsburgh.
I'm a Penguins fan, even though I grew up in Canada, because I loved Mario Lemieux and then Sid the Kid so much.
Of course. Lemieux's the best.
He is the best. The greatest of all time.
How do you feel about Sidney Crosby?
I love Sidney Crosby. You not like him?
No, I love him. Oh, I was I was making a comment like Ashley's gonna slap us both if we keep talking about this, and she hates Sidney Crosby because
Bruins. And, yeah,
yeah,
I get
it's real. But I never thought I would care about hockey, and now I'm obsessed. And so it's made me appreciate Canada because that's where all the good ones are from.
Yeah,
that's true.
All the good players. Okay, but moving on. The Ottawa Jail Hostel. It is a
jail hostel.
You'll understand everything in a moment. But yes, that sounds weird. It is a hostel operated by Hosteling International, and it's in the city of Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. And it was originally, this is an interesting word that I had to Google. It used to be called the Carleton County, what I would have said, gaol, and then I looked it up and it's jail. G-A-O-L.
That's got to be a typo.
I think maybe someone just didn't know how to spell, because I was like, gowl, and when I looked up the pronunciation, it just said jail. Like, do people spell jail like that in Canada?
Did you say J-A-O-L or
G-A-O-L?
Wow, I've never heard
okay,
that.
Okay, so that's not a thing. Maybe, yeah, I don't, and it's only written that way once, and the rest of the time it says jail, so maybe it was just a mistake. I thought it was a Canada thing. Hmm. All right.
Yeah. No, it's a thing.
Is it?
Yeah, it says, like, if you, the Wikipedia for prison, it says prison, also known as a jail or a gaol.
Yeah.
Penitentiary detention center.
So it is another word.
Correction center, correctional facility. Yeah.
But if you look it up on YouTube, it was pronounced jail. And I was like, that's what?
Wow. Okay.
Huh.
Yeah, I've never
we're
heard
all
that
learning.
Before.
We're learning together in this moment.
It's not a weird Canadian thing. It's just a weird
it's just a
that
thing.
Sounds like almost Gaelic thing. Or something.
Right.
But yeah.
Yeah, it says
it must just be old school.
Irish.
There you go.
There you go.
And it was a while
mystery
ago.
Mystery solved.
Thank
episode
you,
over.
The end. So it was originally the Carleton County Jail, more commonly known as the Nicholas Street Jail or Ottawa Jail. And then when it closed in 1972, this hostel company bought it and decided to convert the building, keeping the structure intact and just making it what they say, quote unquote, is fun. Like, mm-hmm. It'll be like you're staying in a jail. Won't that be great?
Yeah.
Which, so quirky.
Yeah, so
you're
quirky.
Telling me a man wasted away in this room for 50 years? That's so cool.
The energy is super chill in here.
Exactly. It's not my cup of tea, but people enjoy it and they stay there. So they kept it intact. They had to update a few things here and there, but like the death row area is still very much intact. They tried to keep it in its original form, which just feels so dark and wrong. They do daily tours, and yes, they let people stay in it as if it's a hostel. So for over a century, this place was used as a jail, and it was connected to the courthouse by a tunnel. And so they would, you know, take somebody to court to get their sentence, and then they would immediately be brought over to this jail to be hanged. So it has some dark energy over there because a lot of people have died. There was the hanging of a man named Patrick Whelan in 1869. He assassinated a politician, so he was pretty well known. Over 5,000 people witnessed Whelan's hanging, which is crazy for how many people lived in Ottawa at the time and like showed up for that. We were already talking about the population in general.
What year was that?
1869.
That was just like what they did on the weekend.
I mean, it's true. It was a social event.
They
it
literally
really
were
was.
Like, wait, who's getting hanged?
I think totally Canada was only a country for 2 years at that point. Pretty sure Canada was formed in 1867. I might be wrong. If any Canadian listeners are mad, you can
correct
me.
We're not even going to Google it right now. We're accepting that.
Yeah, we're accepting that as truth.
So that was a big deal. And a couple of other people were hanged there as well. Pretty well-known people. And then at the final hanging of a man named Eugene Larment. He killed an Ottawa police detective and was hanged. And then the jail was closed shortly after that. And it just became this outdated facility. Again, they had to do a lot of updates, but they still have the original gallows, which, again, just a really fun time to go stay and enjoy. Go
I
check
wonder
out
if gallows and gaol or jail are similar.
Making connections, guys. Didn't even think of that. That's probably true. They're fully functional, so go enjoy the gallows, everybody. Just head
on
over to the
Ottawa jail. What do you mean fully functional?
It says fully functional and perfectly intact. So I think they could cut some things. There has to be a lock on them. They wouldn't just let people like get drunk and go cut their heads off.
Wait, hold on.
Wait, or what are gallows? It's
what
not
gallows?
The thing that chops your head off. It's the thing where you put your hands in it and your head and you like hang, isn't it?
Oh, that's what a gallow is?
Isn't it?
I thought the gallow is where you actually got hung.
I actually just looked up gallow while you were talking about jail, gaol, or whatever. So I have the definition. a structure typically of two uprights and a cross piece for the hanging of criminals. So uh-huh. I think it's
so it's where you hang people.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is that thing called?
Yeah. What's the thing where your head
guillotine
and arms are in?
Is guillotine when your head is gets what cut I was mixing off. Up.
Gallows, guillotine?
Guillotine. That's when your head gets
oh,
chopped.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, like what's the basket. Thing where they would just like make you sit in the middle of town with your arms and head in it just to like embarrass you? I mean,
because when you say a fully functional gallows, I'm like, who
is there a
uses
rope?
It? Yeah, like what do you mean by fully rope? Functional?
That is just, that's like yeah, how they well, advertise. They're like, hey, we still have our gallows. I'm sure.
If anyone wants them.
Maybe it's just like the platform, the tower. You can just like go up and look around. I assume that's sure. what it's all about. But they tried to keep, you know, as much intact as they could without it like completely crumbling and falling apart. So it's known for having like very dark energy around it, as we mentioned earlier. That is no surprise to anybody. Like you walk in there and it just feels dark because of all the death that happened there. But not even just the hangings. Apparently they just treated everyone awful, like very inhumane practices for all of the people imprisoned there. Like up to 150 prisoners consisting of men, women, and children would be forced to share really tiny cells.
Damn,
like,
Canada.
They were all packed into like 150 people were packed into 50 really tiny cells, just like shoulder to shoulder. Really didn't get to bathe very often, didn't get to eat a lot of food, were, you know, slapped around. It was horrible. So they were not treated well. It was dirty, unsanitary. So just with that combined with all of the hangings that happened there, it just feels like you can't restore that place to anything good. It would just be so dark to be there. So you're either going to go and just feel a feeling of dread, or you may see one of the executed inmates there. People claim that they see Waylon, that man who assassinated a politician. Apparently he'll just stand at the end of your bed and stare at you in the cool. middle of the night. So it's chill. It's really nice.
It's one of my favorite ghost activities.
I love when
you
just
wake
look
up
at
and
me.
They're just staring at you.
So yeah,
I feel like the only thing you can really do at this place is tear it down and build something else, or make it a haunted hostel situation.
Make it like a haunted house attraction that
yeah,
you just
what
walk
else can
through.
You
like,
do
why
with
do you
it?
Need to sleep there? That just feels.
Yeah.
Isn't it crazy that any place you go to, you have no idea what's happened? Like, you can look up historical records, but. Mm-hmm. I bet you 90% of the people who stay in this hostel have no idea. The or I don't know. Maybe they build
maybe,
it as such,
yeah.
But like I remember in Montreal, like 10 years ago, there was this couple that was sitting on the patio of a restaurant, and then the like cement part underneath the window. I don't even know what it's called. The awning or something on
lentil.
The
bill.
What say?
Lentil. Is that what it's called?
Aren't lentils
yes.
like
lentil?
Beans?
Yeah, like the windowsill at yeah, the outside. Yeah. It just broke off of this building in Montreal, fell and crushed a girl to death on the patio.
No.
And like, I think her boyfriend, they were out celebrating her 30th birthday or something. The boyfriend even like lost a couple fingers or something because it like took a couple of, they were holding hand, killed her. And
no.
But the reason I think about this all the time is because the restaurant, after they like cleared her body away and everything, the restaurant was open for business again like 5 hours later.
Yeah.
How?
So, it was a quick
maybe
little cleanup.
It was the next day, but I think it was that same day. But so you're sitting there and you don't know a woman just died here yesterday or five
right,
days
yeah.
ago. But that's the world. You have no idea
mm-hmm. what
any place
on.
You've been, who's died here, what mm-hmm. bad energy there is. It's kind of
so
crazy.
True.
Like, not all of them say, we used to be a jail. Like, you
right.
could
yeah.
be in a place that used to be a terrible thing, and you have no idea.
Yeah.
You just walk in and wonder why you're feeling dread. Like, what happened?
Do you think you'll always feel something bad if you're in a place where bad stuff happened?
I think certain people will. And when I say certain people, I mean Ashley, because she has a sensitivity
yeah.
to those things. I don't always feel the things she feels when we have done our little investigations and go places, but I feel like people who have a sensitivity like Ashley, if something truly bad happened, I think you'd pick up on it.
Yeah, because I've been places where people have said, like, it's so heavy there. And I've walked in and been like, I don't know, maybe they left. Like, it doesn't feel heavy to me.
Right.
And then I've been certain places where I can't even be in the, like, the fucking
Pantages. I knew that's what
I
you were
can't
thinking.
Go to the Pantages. I've been to two shows at the Pantages. I had to leave both shows at intermission, even though I really wanted to see them, because I couldn't breathe.
Really?
Yeah,
do
I couldn't
handle
it.
Do you know
it.
What happened there?
We did an
we
episode.
About
I don't
an
remember
episode.
The exact things, but, like, that's kind of where, what's his name from The Aviator?
Howard Hughes?
Howard Hughes went kind of cuckoo bananas in the Pantages. He had, like, an office up there, and that's kind of where he shut himself in and lost his marbles. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it.
I'm sure there's other things, though, that just weren't public news. Kind of like you said, like maybe horrible things did happen there, but they just go, it's just the Pantages. Come to the Theta. Yeah. We don't know.
Come see Book of Mormon. And it was just
Are both hockey fans. The Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto, which was an iconic one of the original six arenas, they found out like near the end, they ended up turning it into a grocery store and built a new arena for the Maple Leafs. But there was horrible child abuse going on in that place.
Oh, really?
For years. Yeah, like years upon years. And I wonder if I've never shopped in the grocery store there, but I wonder if you're just buying your avocados or whatever.
Yeah, and you're like
what the hell happened in
here? Why do I feel? I'm like sweating.
It's like cold breeze. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because that's always been my belief about, like, you know, so many prisons and asylums are haunted. And I don't even think it necessarily has to do with the amount of death that's happened there. I think it has to do with, like, the amount of bad shit that happened to living people there. Right. And that energy's just sort of bouncing around in there and doesn't have anywhere to go. And
totally. That's why I thought it was important to bring up, like, that prisoners were abused on top of the men who were hanged, because it's like a lot of bad stuff was happening there. It's not just the execution. So I think that place just has a darkness. I will probably skip that stop on my Canada tour.
I'll pull into the parking lot.
Maybe I'll sit outside. Yeah, so far, I don't really want to do the tunnel or the hostel, but these hotels that I'm about to bring up, and these are a little shorter. I know I've been going on and on, but there's two hotels that seem really cool. There's the Fort Garry Hotel in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Everything's still correct?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. Winnipeg. I know Winnipeg. Wow. Don't go to Winnipeg in the winter. You guys were saying Canada's cold. Toronto's not that bad in the winter. My hometown's not that bad. Winnipeg?
Bad.
It is the stereotype of what you think Canadian winter is like.
Like negative temperatures. Like, oh, yeah. Like way negative temperatures.
Yes. Yeah. Very, very negative in every sense of the word.
Yeah. My story today takes place in Manitoba. And when I told Joe about it, he was like, yeah, Manitoba is like directly north of North Dakota. Mm-hmm. And he was basically like, so if you think North Dakota is too warm, move to Manitoba, because that's how fucking cold it is there.
I do.
And then Winnipeg
think
is north.
And then Winnipeg
Manitoba.
Is even further.
Even further up. So the Fort Garry Hotel opened for the first time on December 11th, 1913. It is one of Canada's Grand Railway hotels. The two hotels that I'm talking about both were built for the reason of travelers coming through town on the trains. They wanted to have these big, grand places for them to stay, so they'd be like, Canada's the best. And it became a National Historic Site in 1981. So it's located on Broadway between Fort and Garry Streets. It's a prime location, a luxury hotel for the railway travelers. And it was the first commercial building to be erected on Broadway and the only hotel to be built there. So everybody loved it. It housed many famous people in its heyday. There was Liberace. There was Louis Armstrong. Gordie Howe.
Hey.
Mr. Hockey himself.
Exactly. And even King George and Queen Elizabeth, who stayed there during their 1939 visit to Canada, which I thought was fun. So royals, celebs, they were all there. A lot of people came through, and this hotel just saw a lot of life, probably a lot of drama. Again, probably left some interesting energy there with all the things that could have happened. But the folklore is that there is a very haunted room, number 202, because a woman committed suicide in this room many years ago after learning of the death of her husband in a carriage accident. He had gone out to get her some medicine and was hit and run over by a horse-drawn carriage. And when she learned of the accident, she commits suicide in the hotel room. And she hanged herself in the closet. Yikes. So that room is supposedly very, very haunted, of course. Not a surprise, but there is another legend as well. There is apparently a couple of regular hotel guests that demand to stay in a specific room every time they come because they see a lady in a white ball gown. She's like their buddy now at this point. And they come back repeatedly to see their gal. And the hotel has found proof that there was a Lady Macmillan dressed in a white laced beaded gown who stayed in the room that they request. I couldn't find the number of it, but whatever room it is, December 10th, 1913, the night of the grand opening, and did pass away shortly after. So they think that's who they're seeing, which is kind of fun. She hangs out.
Do you think she's there just because she's like, this place is dope?
Because she just loved it. She was like, did you see my gown?
Yeah. Did anyone notice my gown?
Make a little noise for the outfit, everybody.
It's a good way to get bang for your buck when you spend a lot on a gown. Yeah. Wear it forever.
Wear it for all time.
Spend eternity in this white gown. Yeah, so she seems like she's kind of nice. Room 202 sounds like it's a bit more sinister. Yeah. People who have stayed in the room... some have felt absolutely nothing and say it's all a lie. But for the most part, people say they do feel things in the bed in the night. The bed has lifted off the ground and slammed back down.
Okay.
That's the most extreme. And then other people say it just felt like someone was getting into bed next to them. Like they felt, you know, the weighted down sensation that somebody was getting in. I know. But one of the coolest stories of people visiting, because obviously some people could be total liars. We never know. But this... There was a woman named Brenda Chamberlain. She was a member of parliament. And back in 2000, she stayed in room 202 because she just didn't know anything about it and was like, ghosts aren't real. I'm just trying to get a hotel room. And she could not even make it more than a few hours. She had to switch rooms in the middle of the night because she said someone was jumping on the end of her bed. And she is like a self-proclaimed skeptic, like does not buy into that. And she was like, someone's in my room. And she had to switch. So I did enjoy that story.
I love haunted places. I'm so fascinated by paranormal activity. And I would even be like, hello, room service. I gotta go. I don't want to do this.
No. If you're trying to get a good night's sleep, you don't want an invisible entity jumping on your bed.
Yeah, I don't believe in any of that. But, you know, I don't know how in tune I am with energy because I say I don't believe in that. But I've been in hotel rooms in older hotels where you're like, something's wrong here.
Something
feels off.
Yeah, I don't know if it's in my head, but something's not right here.
Yeah.
And I get super paranoid because I take my hearing aids out when I sleep.
Oh, mm-hmm. Shit.
Yeah, so I'm like, what if there have been like 20 ghosts in my life who have been trying to communicate with me? And they're like, this guy won't fucking wake up now.
I've tried everything.
Yeah.
I tried the crying in the corner. Yeah. I tried the like whispering as I stare at him at the end of the bed.
Yeah.
Nothing. The wailing lady hanging in the closet. Nothing.
They just think I'm fearless. They don't know I'm deaf. Man, this guy's a warrior.
That's so good. There is another hotel that kind of has a very similar history. It's the Banff, right? It's just B-A-N-F-F. That's Banff.
Yeah.
Banff Springs Hotel. It just feels wrong coming out of my mouth. Banff Springs Hotel in Banff, Alberta.
I know
Canada.
This hotel. That's haunted?
Yes.
Did
apparently.
You look at a picture of it when you?
It's gorgeous.
It's
the prettiest
beautiful.
Hotel I've ever seen in my life.
And Banff in general, look up a picture of Banff if anybody's listening and doesn't know it. Banff is like one of the most beautiful places on earth.
Yeah.
Really?
It's insanely gorgeous. All the lake water comes down from the glaciers up north. Lake Ooh. Louise. Look up Google Lake Louise and Lake Louise. Have your mind blown.
Banff.
Wow.
I've heard it's beautiful, but I haven't looked at pictures of just Banff in general. But this hotel, I could not stop looking at pictures of it. It's so gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's called the Castle of the Rockies because it looks like a castle just surrounded by mountains and nature, and it's stunning and it's perfect. Most beautiful scenery. So it was built for the same reason as the hotel that I mentioned previously for, you know, people who were coming through town on the railway. They wanted to have a nice luxury hotel, and boy, was this one luxurious. It was modeled after a Scottish castle with the towers, the stone walls, the whole shebang. There is another haunted room, room 873. It was reportedly the scene of a tragic murder of an entire family. And it was such a...
Sorry.
Ashley's commentary. Its door has since been bricked up and made to look like the rest of the wall because the room was so gruesome they did not even want to like take part in cleaning it up and fixing it up. It just is bricked off for the rest of time. And guests have reported seeing apparitions outside this room, possibly members of the family who were murdered or the murderer himself. We'll never know.
Was the murder solved?
No. I have no idea who it was. But I just wonder, like, maybe he came back and is, like, guarding the door. I don't know. I know. I hate it all. The Burning Bride is another rumor at this hotel. Story suggests that a woman dressed in her wedding gown lost her life on the staircase when she slipped and fell. There were candles on the stairway as well. So when she slipped and fell down the stairs on top of breaking some bones, her dress caught fire and she burned to death in her wedding gown. So people apparently see a charred bride dancing in the ballroom of this hotel. That is the
story.
That
is some like shining shit.
It is.
Yeah. What I'm hearing is never wear a gown.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, keep it casual.
Keep it casual.
Don't mess around with the gown.
Some jean shorts, some jorts.
Even on your wedding day.
On your wedding day, jorts, sandals, maybe some sneakers actually would be the least dangerous of all. And, oh, there, the last one is there is a bellman, perhaps the most popular of all the ghosts at the Banff Springs Hotel. His name was Sam McCauley. He was a bellman at the hotel in the 60s and 70s. And there's not a lot known about exactly how he died, but it is just known that the ghost that is seen walking around the hotel looks exactly like this man. If you see a photo of him, people will say, that's who I saw. He was on the stairs. He was in the kitchen. He was here. Like, it is his face. They don't know how he died, where exactly it happened, if it was even in the hotel. But he seems to be in his 1960s bellman uniform, helping guests get into locked rooms or turn on the lights. He's kind of just all over. You could see him on any floor, but most commonly he's seen on the ninth floor. So I kind of want to go to this hotel and see if I can find Sam.
Yeah, no kidding.
I think it sounds so fun.
Yeah, I mean, Sam seems pretty chill. I like it when ghosts haunt a place because they liked that place and not because they were set on fire on their wedding night.
I know. You want the happier
like,
tales?
Yes. Yeah. I like the ones that are just like, I'm just here. Like, this is where I like to be.
Yeah, like the lady in the beaded gown who's
showing off her dress.
She's probably like doing a shimmy. Yeah, those are much better.
Or like, you know, whatever ghosts do. I don't really understand.
So you guys, you both believe in ghosts?
Mm-hmm.
Do.
Because like, what's the point of hanging out if you got no beef? Like, what's a ghost doing?
You got no beef. That's,
you know what I mean? Like, if you're just a ghost hanging out, like, why is that person not moving on?
Well, the personal belief wise, it mostly because like, you know, a lot of people imagine that when you die and if there is something afterwards that you go to a place when really it's probably more likely that you are just a different form of energy here.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily that they're like hanging around. It's just that like we are constantly surrounded by that other dimension or plane or whatever it is. And just like some people have better eyesight, better hearing, better whatever, some people have the ability, including animals. That's why animals are constantly reacting to things that we're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Is there a power line? Like, what's happening? Because some people just have the ability to see them. Like, what is it? There's some shrimp in the ocean that can see, like,
it has a sensitivity
that can see ghosts all the time. And he wrote into the Discovery Channel. No, he, the shrimp can see like 28 spectrums of light.
What?
And humans can see like 7.
Like a lot
even. Yeah. So just the fact that there are literal colors that we have no idea exist or can see, like infrared, for example. Mm-hmm. It's a real thing. We know, but we can't see it with our own eyes. Mm-hmm. So there could be things. There could be like a dragon in this room right now that's a different spectrum of light, and we just can't physically see.
I feel him behind me, but I can't see him.
Yeah. You know? I know he's there. I smell the smoky breath, but I can't see him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the only reason that I believe is because I've seen so many of them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't believe
you
in ghosts.
You have such a seen ghosts?
So many ghosts.
Really?
I mean, like 5, but that's enough to be like, check
they
that.
They take like a human form when you see them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes it's shadows. Sometimes it's full, complete people, head to toe people. Sometimes it's just a face hovering. That's my least favorite.
No, you've seen you. Just a face hovering. Where?
And in the backseat of a car. It was my aunt. I was I told the story early on an episode in season 1. It was like my first paranormal experience. My aunt had passed away of cancer when I was 3 and my sister was just born. And this was at some point later. This was years later. We were going to Florida from Illinois, and I was like laying in the back seat of my parents' car, just like in and out of sleep. And at one point I opened my eyes and my aunt's face was just in front of me. It was just her face. And she looked like she did before she died. So she was like very withered. And I was laying on my side and she was like on her side too. Like her face was right in front of me. And she looked very excited. Like, she couldn't believe that I could see her, and she was talking, but no sound was coming out. So it was just like, and I was like, what is happening? And I just sort of, she just slowly faded away. And I always kind of thought maybe it was a dream until I told the story on an episode, and my sister called me like hysterical because she saw her that day too and never said anything.
In the back seat as well?
In the back seat of the car.
And they just had never spoken about it before, but they lost their
and
minds.
And she was like, that's the only time I've ever seen Aunt Donna.
I know, right? I know. Yeah. It gave me goosebumps too, and I've heard it.
And like nothing happened on that trip because I was like, did we get in a car accident? Right. Or like, what? No, it was just,
she was just visiting.
Randomly in a moving vehicle floated in front of my face.
And I feel like Jamie, Ashley's sister, is me, and my sister, Julia, is Ashley. We have very similar situations where I think Jamie has only had like one or two experiences, and I would say I'm the same. I have like a couple of things I can't explain that make me believe, but I mostly believe because of my sister and all of the things that she has happened to her, and then meeting Ashley later in life, becoming her friend, and all the things that happened to her. I'm like, something's going on. I don't exactly know what. But there is something beyond us that is visiting.
Even Joe, who is Mr.
Skeptic,
does not believe in that shit at all. Like, kind of, even when we first started dating, was like, just don't talk to me about ghosts because I don't believe in it. And it was like, deal, like that works for me. We have a couple things in this apartment even that have happened. And when he was moving in, he said to me, he was like, I'm not going to start seeing ghosts and shit. And I was like, that's not how it works. I believe you're like born with the ability or not. Like, I don't, he's now seen. He's had three different experiences, and he now is a full believer.
Poor Joe.
I know. And I was like, I am so sorry. I really, truly believed.
What is that? Like, you opened up a portal for him to see? Like, how's that contagion kind of work?
I don't know. I have no idea. Like, and I wonder if it is because, like, after he did have that first experience, he like, talked to me about it. He was like, I don't like it. What can I do to not? And I was like, I don't know. Like, I don't know shit about this. Like, I just know that sometimes they see him. Like, I don't. Yeah. I'm not an expert. I have no idea. So I talked to a friend who's like a medium, and she told us what to do, but I didn't want to. This medium told me whatever's here is an older gentleman, and he cares very much so for Joe and me. And I don't know if it's my grandfather, his grandfather, or just a random person, but I didn't really want to like send him away because if he cares us, then, and he doesn't do anything bad, it's just sometimes creepy shit happens and I don't mind it. Joe fucking hates it.
Wow, he takes care of us and he just likes to watch us have sex every once in a while.
Just sits at the end of the bed.
We see him in the reflections of the mirror and
have you seen an old man?
I've never seen an old man. No.
Okay.
No.
You've probably like felt his presence in ways that you didn't know was him, but it was cool that Amy, the medium, like saw that.
Yeah.
Just randomly, like Werther's originals around the apartment.
I do keep a lot of Werther's here, and maybe that's what brought him in.
That's what
maybe
attracted
he was like,
him.
That's my kind of girl. She likes her caramel candies.
That's so good. Werther's.
They are great.
Old person candy.
Let's move on to some weird stuff about Canada. DJ's going to entertain us with a couple strange Canada facts.
You know, they're weird things that you don't think are weird when you grow up in Canada.
Yeah.
But then you move here and you're like, oh, you guys don't do that? Like, we drank, this is kind of well known, I guess, but we drank our milk out of a bag.
It still fascinates me every time I hear
it. I didn't know that until I sent you, like, the, you know, like, talk about weird things about Canada, like milk bags.
Yeah, that was like number one on it. And I was like, that's not weird. And then I was like, I guess I haven't had a bag of milk since I moved to America.
A bag of milk. So what does the bag look like? Like, it has to be pretty sturdy.
No, it's not sturdy.
Nope, it's a Ziploc, usually.
Just well, you put it in a container. So you put the milk bag in a... It's like a rectangle about a foot tall and maybe 5 inches wide. And then the corners, it comes to corners. So it's like rounded. It's almost cylindrical, but then it comes to corners.
Okay.
And then you cut off the top corner and you put it in. There's like milk. There's containers made for milk bags. Uh-huh. Fledgling industry in Canada. If you can get in on that milk bag container, you're golden. And then, you know, you can cut it off with scissors, but sometimes there's even milk bag cutters that people have as magnets on the fridge. You grab the milk bag cutter off the fridge, cut that corner, put the magnet back up there. It's just making me nostalgic for my Canadian childhood. But
I was going to say, you're just grinning ear to ear over there. I love it.
And then, yeah, you just pour your... And it's like, it's pretty sturdy when it comes out. You can cut it in a weird way where it comes out kind of... But if you get a good solid cut on it, it comes out... It so feels satisfying to pour milk out of a bag.
You're not just ever holding a bag. It goes into a container.
Maybe some people don't have the container, but yeah, my experience was you did it in a civilized manner.
You had a container for it.
That makes sense. Yeah.
I wonder why.
I know.
Yeah, I wonder what the origin is on that.
Do you know if milk's, do you remember if like milk stayed fresher longer?
I don't know.
Yeah.
And I also used to see, like, we watched a lot of American film and TV, and I would see like missing kids on the side of a milk carton, and I'd be like, damn man, we don't give the missing kids any attention here. Like, I don't know how we get that on the side of the bag, right. You know,
we can't put it on the bag.
On the side of the bag. Amazing. You should put it on the inside of the bag so you have to drink like half or more to see.
Oh, I guess I should clarify. It's transparent. The bag's
transparent.
Yeah, you're seeing the white milk.
You just see
in there.
The milk.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, it's a
mind is blown over.
Bag. Yeah, it's pretty. Milk it's pretty bag. Like delicious looking to see a bag of milk.
I don't doubt that. Milk looks like, creamy
so
it, and
it's
nice.
Always bad. Like when you go to the grocery store, your milk comes in a bag. There's no carton option.
I'm sure there is a carton option. There wasn't. I mean, I don't. We never got it when I was a kid. Maybe there was, and it was more expensive. You know, it's got me wondering now because I don't drink milk or eat animal products or anything. I'm wondering like. Would if I wanted to get oat milk, would it come in? Are there in bags of oat milk now?
Ooh.
Or because
that's a good question.
I doubt it. I feel like they probably. I bet you Canada's moving away from the bag. If I had to guess,
a lot of people are moving away from the bag.
Yep,
And it's probably
plastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to be progressive.
The
cartons are the most natural.
I guess so because they started putting water. Like I mean, I'm sitting here awful with my plastic water bottle. They're starting to put water in cartons now, so I do think it's the best option.
Yeah, the plastic bag's got to be gone in Canada.
Which is sad though.
Plastic
it was
patch
tradition.
In the Pacific Ocean is probably all just Canadian milk bags.
All the milk bags.
Another thing that was on this list that made me go, that's not weird. And then I realized, oh, I guess it is pretty weird, is this list was really funny, actually. The number 9 thing that's weird about Canada is immigration is welcome.
Okay. Technically, very strange.
Many Americans welcome immigrants. Many Canadians don't welcome immigrants. So it's a pretty blanket statement to be making. Canadian healthcare, yada yada. I mean, yes, it's awesome, but it's harped on too much. Yeah, the healthcare system here in America is a little backwards,
it's trash.
But
a little horrible.
Oh, we say washroom, like bathroom, restroom. We say washroom. You know, I said I had to change a few things when I came down here to make sure I wasn't showing the Canadian side
of me.
Like when you're doing stand up and you want to make sure you're like appealing to people, you don't want them to be distracted by a word choice. So I changed washroom to bathroom in my mind. And instead of saying A, I started saying, huh.
Oh.
So I'm like, oh, pretty awesome weather out there, huh? But it doesn't, I do miss saying A.
A's
huh
so
sounds
much
like
cooler.
Too like
huh
yeah
huh, uh-huh. huh. Yeah.
Like so American
sounds like from where we're from huh?
yep
huh?
Illinois
yep.
A is so much better.
Oh, this one's huge. Canada's money is colorful, like every like our $5 bill is blue, the 20 is green. So like I'll you know I got a bunch of bills in my wallet, not a bunch of bills, maybe like 2.
DJ's got a lot of money in his wallet.
$5,000 cash money, yeah. Just in case you got to solve some problems. But they all look too similar here in America. They feel
do.
Too similar. And when they came out with the, I think it was the new $50 bill when I was maybe 13 or 14, there was a rumor that it smelled like maple syrup. And I think it does. I remember being like, oh, that's probably an urban legend, but I'm pretty sure the 50 does smell like maple syrup.
Really?
I really want to believe
that's the
that's
most
true.
Canadian thing I've ever heard in my
true.
Entire life.
I know. But look, I'll show you a picture. Doesn't that, don't you just Can't you just see yourself sorting that money out? Like American money, you're like, what is this a one or is this a 20?
I know. It's also just nice to like be able to.
The colors are better.
Look in your purse or look in your wallet and just be like, ah.
I know what this is.
Yeah,
let me grab
grabbing this bill.
And they do. They look pretty. It's more satisfying.
Yeah, they are pretty.
And cute. I went to school from kindergarten to eighth grade. And then went to high school from 9 to 12. But I feel like you guys have middle schools where you go to a different school for like 7 and 8 or 6,
yeah,
7.
Some people do. I mean, I went to a Lutheran school. Mm. That worked out.
Like heavily, like you were like,
yeah.
Okay, I went to Catholic. So I
did too. Yeah. I went to Catholic.
Lutheran, what different between that and Catholic? Like,
not. It's like, it's basically the Catholic form of Christianity, but like
that's when Martin Luther broke off,
yeah,
right?
The, yeah, basically he was like, the Catholic Church has, you know, I don't like the damnation stuff that you guys preach. So he went off and made a more like nice Catholicism, basically. But we also had to do the confirmation and everything.
Oh yeah.
Do you have a confirmation name?
I didn't get a name. No, Catholic. Did you?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
What's your name?
Maximilian.
Oh my.
Did you get to
gosh.
Pick that one yourself?
Saint Maximilian. Yes, I did. I can't remember what Maximilian did, but I was like, that's a badass name.
It's so badass. Yeah. Who cares what he did?
DJ stands for Donald James. And I'm also, I have a middle name named after my grandpa, Frank. So I'm Donald James Frank Maximilian Demers. That's my name.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was Saint Cecilia. And again, I don't remember why I picked her. She had something that fit my vibe.
What
but
name?
I forget. Cecilia?
Oh, that's a nice one.
I'm sure it had to do with music, knowing me. It was something musical.
We didn't do saints. We just had JC.
Just all Jesus Christ?
Yeah, JC, God, Holy Spirit, Holy, you know, the Trinity.
I think that is
that was
what
big.
Sets Catholicism mm-hmm. apart.
But we
it's
didn't do saints.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's probably why I didn't do a confirmation name. But we had to do the whole thing where we got up there and like answered questions and took communion for the first time. And
it's a lot of pressure.
And then like our confirmation was in eighth grade, which was also mm-hmm. graduation. And it was literally, I got confirmed. I took communion for the first time. And then it was like, I never went to church again.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I went to a public high school and I was like, I don't believe in that at all. So
I was the exact same way. And thank goodness my parents gave me the option and were like, if you don't want to go, you don't want to go. Like, you're at the age now where we're not going to force you. I was like, thank you.
Thank you.
It was awful.
When I got confirmed, the priest was adamant. This isn't just a formality. Like, this is you like reaffirming your commitment to God. And he was really going on about it. And I remember feeling this yearning to like, I was like, everybody's talking about feeling close to God. I want to feel close to God. So I wanted to start going to church, and my parents weren't even going to church at that time. So they had just split up too. So I was like, Mom, let's go to a couple churches, see what fits. And we went to a couple together. And the second one we went to, I was like, I want to go here and I want to be an altar boy. That's how I think I'll get close to God. And my mom was like, no.
No.
You're not going to be an altar boy. No, and looking back, happening. I'm like, thank you, Mom.
Yeah,
thank you so
made
much.
A good call.
Yeah. She has some intel.
Right.
Yeah. She well, I mean, the intel is the news.
Yeah. The intel is common knowledge.
It's what
yeah.
we know from the news.
I got lucky too, where my mom was like, yeah, you're not going to school there anymore. Because we had to. Since it was a Lutheran school, we had to do like sermon reports and all this shit. We had to go to church once a week. Mm-hmm. So when that was
sermon
over.
Sermon report? You had to like write about what the sermon was about?
So we couldn't lie and be like, we were at church.
Oh my
so we
God.
Had to like fill out this form and be like, what did the pastor say about this? And it's like, I don't know. My mom was cool as shit though. Sometimes she would be like, you want to sleep in? I'd be like, yeah. She'd be like, I'll write your sermon report for you.
Pam, you dreamboat.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's a good mom.
She really had my back. Anyways.
I love it.
We also don't say seventh grade, eighth grade. Canada, grade 7, grade 8, grade 9.
Ah.
That's another change I had to make in my mind. Everybody says college here in America, even if you went to like a prestigious one. Canada, you go to college or university, and university has a bit more like esteem.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you don't, there's no differentiation here. Like, even if you go to like Harvard, you still say, I went to college.
Yeah.
In Canada, like if you go to university and somebody's like, do you go to college? You're like, no, I didn't go to college. Yeah. Okay. I'm a university graduate.
I went to university.
Yeah.
No, Americans' way of doing that, which university just sounds better. They'll just be like, yeah, Ivy League. It always just goes into Ivy League, which sounds so pretentious.
Yeah.
But I think it's sort of like community college because they're not universities. They're community colleges.
Right.
But I went to a university and I say college. I never say university. Mm-hmm.
I guess I technically did too, Illinois State University, but I just would never be like, yeah, I attended university. It doesn't sound right.
No.
But
what else? Do you have any other strange?
Well, apparently that this article here, which is on thetravel.com, Canada introduced the world to Coffee Crisp, which is a great chocolate bar. You know Coffee Crisp?
No,
I don't.
Oh, okay. So I guess they didn't introduce the whole world to Coffee Crisp.
Me and Ashley have not seen it.
It's delicious. It's coffee in a chocolate bar, really. I mean, it's delicious.
That sounds good.
It sounds good.
I don't eat really chocolate bars that much anymore. If I were to eat a chocolate bar, I think Coffee Crisp might be my number one.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Does it taste like, have you ever had chocolate covered espresso beans?
Maybe. I
wonder if it tastes like that. Because I love those.
It might not be quite as rich. It's still like factory processed, still like for the mainstream. But yeah, but it's like, it's got like a crunchy layer at the bottom of it.
Ooh,
it's
yeah.
really thick. It's got like a good weight to it. You feel, you know, sometimes like I choose, like I love Score, but I'm not always picking it because I feel like I'm not getting bang for my buck. Like Coffee Crisp, you're like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This thing got weight to it, you know? Yeah.
I could hit a guy with this.
Yeah, exactly.
This could be a weapon.
Yeah, you want your chocolate bar to be a weapon too.
Yes.
To protect yourself when somebody's trying to steal your Coffee Crisp.
Right.
Oh, there's another one here. It's a picture on this site. It's called Hickory Sticks. You guys definitely haven't heard of Hickory Sticks.
No. Mm-mm.
So when I performed on cruise ships for a few years, goddamn nightmare.
And, I was going to ask how it was. Never mind.
Oh, just the worst. But the first one I ever did, I had to have 3 different half-hour shows. And they recruited me from a comedy festival called Just for Laughs. And they said, they saw me do like an 8-minute set. And they were like, do you have 3 different half-hour shows? And I was maybe 4 years into stand-up, 5 years.
I have 12 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, I probably had, let's say, 35 minutes. Maybe.
Yeah.
And they said, you have 3 different half hours, one of them being family friendly, 2 being adult. And I was like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I have all that. And then just they booked me for 3 months down the road and I went into panic mode, tried to write a bunch of shit. And then the first show I did on the cruise, I did this new joke I've never done before. I wasn't even performing in America that much yet. And here I am now performing for a bunch of cruise ship patrons in the middle of the high seas, and my first joke was like, man, it's so hard to eat hickory sticks because there's no way to eat them without having like put them in your mouth and put your full hand in your mouth, and it just, you look like such a Neanderthal. And I finished it and like everyone just staring at me, and I'm like, oh man, that joke didn't work. Man, I thought that joke was funny. I'm saying all this in my head, and then after like a 5-second break, like somebody finally piped up from the audience, they were like, what's a hickory stick?
Oh, my God.
So I was like, oh, you guys just don't know. But it's,
don't
get me wrong, it is a bad joke, but that wasn't why there was no laughter. But yeah, hickory sticks are like little, they're like elongated sticks that taste like hickory. They're not chips. They're like, they're like matchsticks.
Oh, so like, have you ever had the potato sticks?
No.
We have something that's like little sticks of, it tastes like a Lay's potato chip. Like there's
really
not much different,
like,
but they're like little matchstick size things. So I bet it's like the same shape.
Pretty similar, I'd imagine.
Hickory. Yes.
Hickory. Oh, another thing is your Smarties, like the treats, the little circular treat that come in like the long cylinder thing.
Yeah.
We call those Rockets back home.
Rockets?
That's the brand name of them. And Smarties are like a chocolate treat in Canada.
Oh, wow.
I was going to say, I didn't know what Smarties were. I always called them Sweet Tarts. I didn't know that Sweet Tarts was a brand.
Right.
It was just, but every single like time I saw that, it was a Sweet Tart.
That makes sense.
And then someone called them a Smartie, and I was like, oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Rockets is a much cooler name, I will say.
Than Smarties?
Yes.
Yes. Like, and I wonder if they just did Smarties because we also had Dum Dums.
Oh, yeah. And they were like, well, we have to balance.
No, I think I just made
Smarties.
That up in my head.
I like it, though. Let's believe it.
Okay. Today, I have the pleasure of covering UFOs, my all-time favorite subject. Do you believe in aliens? You don't believe in ghosts. Do you believe in aliens?
I shouldn't say I don't believe in ghosts. I've never encountered them, but I'm open to the possibility. I'm not like, no, ghosts don't exist. Alien, I'm kind of in the same realm. I believe ghosts and aliens could exist, but I've seen no evidence.
You just don't have a horse in that race.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I would say I believe equally in ghosts and aliens. They both are like, why wouldn't they exist?
Right.
Yeah.
It's a good place to be.
Yeah, I think that's healthy.
Skepticism.
Yeah.
And they're both both of them, I want to believe a little bit so they're not pissed off when they do eventually come for me. They're like, you were kind of a believer.
Yeah.
We'll take it easy on you.
Yeah. You were kind of a jerk about it. So we are going to incinerate you in your wedding gown. So according to the CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation,
shout
for anyone who doesn't
CBC.
Know, CBC, basically Canada's BBC, mm-hmm. says that Canadians report seeing UFOs in the sky at a rate of 3 times a day, which is crazy, seeing as what I said earlier, there are more people living in the state of California than in the country of Canada. Right. So 3 UFOs a day is pretty...
That's
but
wild.
A lot of the people, I feel like the fact that Canada is so isolated probably, because a lot of UFO sightings happen in like isolated areas. True. So that might explain it too.
Well, and areas where there's not a lot of light pollution, so you can actually see into
over
the sky.
Nature.
Yeah.
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 But the case I'm covering today is known as one of the most well-documented UFO encounters ever in terms of physical evidence at the scene. It's known as the Falcon Lake incident. Have you ever been to Falcon Lake?
Where's that?
Manitoba.
No, never heard of that.
And that is all I know about the location.
I know.
Falcon Lake.
We still have a lot to learn about the geography of Canada.
Just learned about where Winnipeg was, literally.
Today.
And Nova Scotia. Like, I knew it was Canadian thing, but I didn't know that it was, like, hovering outside of Maine.
Right
there.
Like, it's real close to us.
I was almost in Nova Scotia. Nova Scotia.
Beautiful out there. Nova Scotia.
So
it's like Maine, the same kind of,
This took place in 1967 in the Falcon Lake Woods in Manitoba. And this happened to an industrial mechanic and amateur geologist named Stephen Michalek. And as for that pronunciation, I found at least 4 different ways to pronounce his name, and I went with the way Robert Stack pronounced it on Unsolved Mysteries. I felt like that was a safe bet.
Yeah. Good person to trust.
I was like, do I trust this random guy on YouTube, or do I go with Robert Stack?
Stack.
And by the way, season 5, episode 8, they cover this case. And the guy, the mechanic, is on the episode. So you can see him talk about it himself, which is very cool. He was 51 years old at the time, and at least once a year, he liked to venture out into the area around Falcon Lake to look for quartz and silver. He had a very successful trip the year before, so in May of 1967, he decided to go out and get some more quartz and silver. And on May 20th, he was working on a vein of quartz, which apparently is what that's called.
Mm-hmm.
When all of a sudden he was scared half to death by a gaggle of nearby geese that erupted into loud honking. And when he looked up, he saw 2 cigar-shaped objects with a reddish glow hovering about 150 feet away, or for Canadians, about 45 meters. I looked up the conversion.
We say feet. We
You're
say
welcome.
Feet.
Do you say
Do
feet?
You?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We say inches too. We say we got a lot of that American influence, but we don't say Fahrenheit. You guys are alone in that.
Yeah,
we really are alone in that. We're the only ones.
Do you say miles or kilometers?
Kilometers.
Yeah.
All but right, we know, like, we know what miles are.
Yeah.
But like Fahrenheit is like a thing we don't even bother.
You guys are kind of a mutt then. You use
You're a blend of a lot of countries. I like it.
Like, I think there might have been a change when we officially went over to the metric system, because older people, like my dad, would say miles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, it would, but growing up, it was only kilometers for me.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
I feel like if I went back to my hometown in Walnut Hill, Illinois, and I said kilometers, they'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Like, they wouldn't even know what I was talking about.
You're speaking a different language.
The weirdest one is in Britain, where they use stones to weigh people.
Yeah.
Like, where that always throws me off.
Yeah. This guy weighs 12 stones. You're like, what? Is this a caveman type? Like, why are we weighing in stones?
Because stone is 10 pounds, right?
Beats the hell out of me.
I was going to say, you know better than me. I have no clue.
So one of these cigar-shaped objects came down and landed. And the other one hovered in the sky for like a minute and then zipped away. And he said when it landed, it was now a disc shape. But he can't – it happened to him so quickly that he doesn't know if it morphed from one shape into another or if it looked like it was one shape. And then as it landed, he realized it was a disc. But he said for sure he thought it was 2 cigar-shaped crafts. And then one came down and landed. And all of a sudden, it was like sort of the traditional UFO disc with like a little hump on top.
Okay.
He did not think aliens. He wasn't like, these are aliens. He actually believed it was a secret United States military craft. And he was like, oh, yeah. Like, he was pumped yeah. to see it. So right. he sat down. He, like, got out his whatever notepad, whatever, and he sketched the craft. It took, like, 20 minutes. He literally just sat there and, like, drew it. But the craft never took back off. No one ever came out of the craft. So he was like, I wonder if this person needs help. I wonder if they are grounded because they need help. So he approached the craft. He said he saw an open door on the side with a bunch of bright lights inside, and he heard muffled voices coming from inside the craft as well. He said that at that point, he called out, offering to help the Yankee boys if they needed it. He literally called that. He thought they were Americans, and he was like, Yankee boys, do you need help? The voices went quiet when they heard his voice and did not answer. So Stephen tried to offer help in Polish, which was his native language, Russian, and finally in German, getting no answer for any language. And it was at that point that he was like,
I don't feel great.
I actually might not be supposed to be seeing this, so I'm going to get out of here. So right before he walked away, he took another look into the craft, and he said that the lights inside of this whatever it was were so bright, he ended up having to flip down his welding goggles. Like, he wore his welding goggles to chisel out the stones and stuff, but it has, like, the actual welding shield. He had to put it down because it was so bright to look at.
Wow.
He did not see any passengers. He reached out to touch the craft, and the fingertips of the glove he was wearing melted completely. What? He said the closer he got to the craft, the hotter it got. Like, the air felt hotter, almost like humidity. He said it smelled like sulfur. And he just, at that point, was very weirded out, especially when the glove melted. And that wasn't just him saying that. They ended up going back after, and they found the glove. So, like, it actually did melt on something.
Yeah, that would scare the shit out of anyone. If the glove just instantly melts when you touch it, I'm out.
Like, the fingertips melted off. And at that point, he was like, okay, fuck me, bye, I'm out for sure. He started walking away. And when he started walking away, apparently the craft started moving counterclockwise. And Stephen noticed a panel on the craft that contained a grid of holes, and it was, like, pointing towards him. And he said at that moment, a gust of air or gas or something came out of the craft and hit him in the chest, and it hit him and pushed him back and set his shirt and his hat on fire.
Whoa.
So he rolled on the ground, he took off his hat and literally ripped his shirt off. He was on fire. He stopped, dropped, and rolled, and then he just took off running. He's running through the woods. And at that point, he's so disoriented. He's nauseous. He had to stop to vomit several times. He eventually made his way back to his motel room in Falcon Lake and immediately caught a bus back to Winnipeg and went to the hospital. He was treated for burns on his chest and stomach that later turned into raised sores on a grid-like pattern, just like the one he described on the craft. And for weeks afterwards, he suffered from diarrhea, headaches, blackouts, and weight loss. So for anyone who knows about radiation poisoning, that's kind of what he was going through. So I'll tell you what happened next. But first, I have to tell you, Stephen's son, Stan, wrote a book called When They Appeared, which is the inside story of Stephen's encounter. But the title actually refers to the endless hordes of people who came after his family, after his dad had this experience. So the Mounties, the Air Force, the American Air Force, the media, various other government agencies, interested members of the public, all descended on the family's small home in Winnipeg for years. He said there were endless visitors, phone calls, no matter how many times they changed their number, stalkers, people who would follow Stan, the kid, to school, who was 10 at the time, and corner him to ask him questions, like people following him to school. And Stan said the incident flipped their lives over, and it took several years before it even started to die down.
Jeez.
So that's what the book is about, which is more fascinating to me, I think, than the actual story.
Because it became such a spectacle, and they were harassed. Yeah.
Until Stephen's death in 1999 at the age of 83, he said that he shouldn't have ever said anything to anyone, but he felt at the time that it was his duty mostly to tell people to avoid these things if they saw one, to prevent people from getting hurt like he did.
Yeah.
It should also be noted that in Poland, before he brought his family over to Canada, he was a military policeman, so reporting events was, like, kind of his thing.
Mm-hmm.
He never, ever, not once said they were aliens. He repeated his story a billion times. He would always tell it in insane detail, but never said it was extraterrestrials because, as he put it, there was no evidence to prove that it was extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
So I have pictures for you guys of his chest and his burnt shirt.
Oh, my God.
In the hospital. And that was his shirt that they found.
That is definitely a grid-like pattern on yeah. his stomach. My goodness.
Oh, my gosh. I did not think it was going to be that exact.
Yeah.
It's like in a perfect straight grid. Whoa.
So
what could unsettling. Have done that? That's insane.
Yeah.
That's wild.
It started when the Winnipeg Tribune wrote a story about Stephen being burned by a UFO, which technically that's what it was. It was an unidentified flying object. He didn't know what it was. And then that's when the shit hit the fan. The case was investigated intensely by several levels of government, including the United States Air Force. Items were retrieved from the encounter site, including his melted glove, burned shirt, and some tools that were subjected to extensive analysis at various crime labs. No one ever was able to determine what caused the burns on him. At the landing site, there was a circle about 15 feet in diameter, completely devoid of moss and vegetation that covered the rest of the area, which is where he claims the craft was.
Yeah.
Soil samples along with the clothing were tested and were deemed to be highly radioactive, which would explain his nausea, vomiting, blackouts, etc. There were also pieces of metal that had melted into the cracks in a rock nearby that tested positive for high levels of radiation. And there's a piece that Stan, his son, still has today that remains radioactive.
Whoa.
This is the craft that he, sort of the sketch that he made. And then the bottom picture is a piece of metal that literally melted into a crack of a rock in the area.
And I love this picture because to give you reference for the size of the metal, they have a toonie, a $2 coin beside
it. Is that what it is?
Yeah. That's a very Canadian picture if I've ever seen one.
Get that Canadian money.
So, I literally was like, I don't know, Mexican dollar? I don't know.
No clue.
Okay. Wow. So that's the shape he said it turned into after the cigar shape.
Yeah. Wow. And he said, I can't tell you if it morphed into that shape or if in the sky it looked like a cigar. And then as it came down, I realized it was not a cigar shape.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, isn't the American government just, they're releasing a bunch of stuff now pretty much saying they exist, right?
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
That UFOs They've are finally everywhere all the time.
That, like, we see them every day. We don't know what they are.
Yeah.
But even the American government is like, but we don't know they're aliens. It's like, well, what's the other option?
Yeah.
Because
what the hell is it?
If we don't know what they are and we know that it's not our country or any other known country, we know we don't have this technology. What is the other option if it's not extraterrestrial?
Yeah, yeah. That freaks me out.
The other option is that it's us in the future, which also not a huge fan of.
Nope. I don't want to see that. I'm not ready.
Us in the future. Okay, kind of like breaking some sort of like time continuum and
coming
back.
Yeah, or like coming back and just like checking, making sure things go according to plan or making sure that we don't blow shit up. Like maybe this is a very tumultuous time. The biggest theory and the one that I attest to is that, like, for example, when Roswell happened and when there was a huge boom of UFO activity in the 40s and 50s, 2 weeks after Roswell happened, the CIA was formed. A week after Roswell happened, secretly, the NSA was formed. And the boom in technology since Roswell is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
It does absolutely seem like we got some sort of intel from somewhere.
Right.
But also, if you think about it, World War II, I mean, we were dropping A-bombs.
Mm-hmm.
So say they are multidimensional creatures. Say that they just live on a different plane, like not Mars, not like outer space. Say they live here. They're just on a different plane. We have no idea what kind of damage we could have caused to them.
Yeah.
We could have set off those bombs in Japan and literally killed billions of them. And now they're here making sure we don't set off any more bombs.
Yeah, maybe they're just watching over us. Like, don't. Yeah. Go off the timeline. Keep everything safe.
Yeah. It's like an episode of Loki.
I was just thinking that. They're trying to get rid of the variants.
That brings a sense of calm to my heart. You know, because I don't trust the current leaders we have in this time. yeah. and on this plane. So if we got people coming from another time and plane
making
to look
sure
after,
that they're me too. Yeah. I kind of feel I trust them more. They obviously give a shit about the planet, universe.
It
what
seems
have
like
you?
It.
Maybe they're just joyriding. I mean, you know.
Also, who knows?
Yeah. Like, oh my God, this UFO is crazy. We got to take this thing for a ride.
You're next.
It's just a bunch of teenagers. Right. Yeah. So Stephen was still sick the following year. He suffered from blackouts. Also, the burns would flare back up, like randomly, like they would heal and then they would flare back up. Doctors did a thorough investigation. Doctors? Exam, probably. And sent him to a psychiatrist to see if there's any way the injuries could be psychosomatic. But the psychiatrist report came back saying this was a very pragmatic man, very down to earth, not the type of person who would make up stories, and there was nothing wrong with him psychologically that they could find. So I've already ordered my copy of When They Appeared.
I was going to say, I really want to read the book now.
They have it on Amazon.
Oh, good.
That was not an ad for Amazon. We do not support Jeff Bezos here.
But everyone get a copy of
the book. Go to space and stay there.
Stay up there.
Yeah. So the book is an account of what his father says happens and what he experienced himself. For example, he says he can still vividly remember when his dad came home sick that day. He remembers seeing him in bed looking pale and really sick. And he remembers being very scared because his dad was obviously injured. But no one could tell him or his mom anything about what happened. And people were immediately calling his dad crazy.
Yeah.
And he was just like terrified. He also remembers the smell in the bedroom. He described it as incredibly stinky, smelling of sulfur and burnt motor, and he said that it was coming out of his dad's pores and you could smell it so strongly on him for weeks afterwards. Oof. So whatever happened to him, like whatever happened to him, it wasn't something happened.
Yes.
Whether it was ET, I don't know. But something happened to him. Something physically burned him, left radioactive goop all over everything.
Like, none of this is normal. This is not an everyday happening. I don't know why people were not more up in arms.
Yeah. The family endured condemnation and criticism in the public. They called Stephen crazy. Like I said, Stan was bullied in school. It was a nightmare, but Stephen never backed away from his story. He never, like I said, claimed to have seen aliens, and until he died, he still considered it a secret military craft, was his belief. And the official conclusion from all of the authorities and agencies that investigated this case is that the event is unexplained.
Just leaving it at that. Mystery.
Yeah, we don't know.
All right.
Oh my gosh!
But that is wild and woolly, tell ya.
Wild
and woolly. That's quite a story.
I know. But that is all the time we have this week for Keep It Weird. First and foremost, a huge thank you to our guest today, DJ. Thank you so much
for having me.
For coming on the show.
This was good. I don't often explore extraterrestrial or weird things like this, so I feel like I might go down a bit of a rabbit hole now and explore a bit more. Open up my perception to some new realities.
There you go. I'll send you some of our favorite episodes so you can listen and hear some crazy stories.
I'd love to.
Yeah.
I will say I could see that your wheels were turning during this episode while we were talking, and that I can tell you already do have an open mind. Like, you were actually listening, whereas like there's definitely been people listening to me and Ashley's stories kind of rolling their eyes. So we appreciate you.
Of course. Yeah. I love this shit. I mean, I'd love to see a ghost. One that doesn't hurt me.
For sure.
Preferably. But I'd love to. I'm like Mulder. I want to believe.
Yes.
I want to believe. Yeah.
That's what we always say.
Thanks for having me.
But will you dedicate your life to it?
If I saw
and
one.
And ruin your career. Right. For it.
I would change the trajectory of my career. That's for sure. Yeah.
Listeners, you can find both of DJ's comedy albums, Indistinct Chatter and Uninterpreted, on Spotify. You can watch DJ's stand-up and his Conan and AGT appearances on YouTube at www.youtube.com/DJDemers. You can listen to either of his podcasts, Definitely DJ or Alex and DJ Watch a Doc, on iTunes or Spotify. And you should definitely follow him on Instagram at DJDemers, DEMERS. Did I miss anything?
No, that was beautiful. Thank you.
It really was. Yes, Ashley.
Really nailing this whole having a guest back thing. Feeling good about it.
Yes, thanks for being our first guest back.
Yes.
Perfect.
And thank you guys as well, as always, for listening to our show. Make sure you tune in next week for some Canadian true crime stories. They're not all super nice up there.
Mm-mm.
Got some bad guys. And the following week, we'll be scaring you with some listener ghost stories. Follow us on Instagram as well at Keep It Weirdcast to stay up to date with everything we're up to. For those of you who are all caught up and having to re-listen to older episodes, we have many options for you to get new content. You can check out our YouTube at youtube.com/keepitweirdpodcast for hundreds of strange news stories and some spooky paranormal videos. You can also get bonus episodes by donating to our Patreon at patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast. Pretty sure we have close to 50 episodes available there for just $5 or $10, and you can donate once or monthly to continue to have access to those. You'll also get a newsletter on the last day of every month and some discount codes for merch. And you can head to our Etsy store at etsy.com/shop/keepitweirdpodcast and grab yourself a t-shirt, hoodie, tank top, blanket, or a pair of the most comfortable sweatpants in the world and rep your favorite show everywhere you go. DJ, is there a popular Canadian farewell?
Take off, you hoser.
What?
Excuse me?
What? Is that real?
That's a classic thing from Bob and Doug McKenzie, two Canadian icons in the early 80s. One of them was Rick Moranis. They're fictional characters. Strange Brew, a classic Canadian comedy movie. Yeah, they would say take off, hosers.
Take off hosers?
Hoser, which is like a derogatory term, but kind of friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah, take off, you hoser.
Yeah, see you later, douchebag.
Right. Take off, you hoser.
And keep it weird,
keep
eh?
Keep it weird, eh?
But yeah. It's kind of ironic to have, like, you know, a half deaf dude being the sound engineer on a podcast.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
I'm like, I think it sounds okay.
You guys, pretty good.
I mean, it sounds good to me. Yeah. So, and no one's complained about it.
That's really funny.